The following is a production of WILL AM 580 Public Radio on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's January the 30th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, new U.S. Secretary of Ag Ed Schaefer says the president wants the farm bill done. Apparently, and I have not confirmed this, he also says he's breaking wind. There's other real news too, but I've already blown any shot of making that serious, so just stay with us. And Dave Dickey will be along in a moment on a more serious subject. It's cold. We'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City about the weather. That'll happen just after the bottom of the hour. And along the way, we'll start thinking about the planting season. Iowa State Extension agronomist Roger Elmore has some advice on how to get the most yield from every acre of corn. It all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In Chicago, on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby March wheat futures at $9.22.5, down 21.5 cents today. May contract at $9.39.23 lower, and the July at $8.66.25, down 17.25. The March hard red winter wheat in Kansas City was 23.25 lower at $9.67 for the day. And from the Minneapolis Grain Exchange today, the nearby March contract there gained 16 cents at $13.35, or rather $13.27 for the day. And the May contract finished the afternoon at $12.33, down 23.25. Actually, those numbers are not the correct ones. Let's see if we can pull those up. And we have the Minneapolis Grain Exchange. Yeah, we do. Down up 16 at $13.43 on the settlement price for the March. The May at $12.20, down 23.75. So the numbers were correct as we looked at them. Let's take a look at the numbers from the corn pit. Make sure they're correct. Two down 2.5 cents at $4.98.5 in the nearby March. The May futures at $5.10.25, down 2.5. And July at $5.18.75, 2.5 lower. December contract at $5.10. The settlement price there, 0.75 cents lower. March contract in the soybean pit, 9 cents higher, $12.75.75. May futures, $12.94, up 8.5. And July futures up 10.25 at $13.07.25. November beans, $12.29.25, up 6.5 cents. March futures in the bean meal pit, up 3.10, $3.42.70. The settlement price, the March bean oil, up 4 at $53.46. Feb live cattle, 25 higher at $91.40. The Jans at $99.65. And the feeders, up a dime for the day. And the February lean hogs at $58.45. We're up 45 cents on the afternoon. A quick look at the outside markets. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 135 points at 12,615. And the March crude oil at 92.33, up 69 for the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services on the line for Wednesday afternoon to take a look at the commodity markets and the outside markets today. Hi, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's talk first about the Fed, because they lowered the rate again by a half point today. That following 3 quarters yesterday. Is it enough, and do you like it?
You know, this is good news for the economy, and hopefully the stimulus package that the president and the House are advocating will be enacted. And when the news broke, I think the Dow was up about 30 points, and it's up 174 points and a very strong rally. So obviously it's good news. One interesting point, a lot of my customers do go to Florida for the winter, and my favorite question is what can you buy a house or that good condo by the ocean for, and how much cheaper? And we do hear the word a third less, some maybe 40% less down in that wonderful climate of Florida. So obviously there's a housing crisis down there, a subprime crisis as well as many other parts of the U.S.
And maybe those houses were overvalued compared to what they should have been. Let's hope that's the case. I certainly hope the value of my house doesn't drop.
Yeah, but
by
in
that
warm
much.
Weather, you could always pay for that little bit added benefit, Todd.
All right.
Warmth.
You got yourself a home down there?
Not yet.
Not yet. Well, you'll have to retire someday and get a house someplace, I suppose. Let's talk about what you've been working on for the last 30, 35 years or so, which is the commodity markets. Tell me what you saw today.
You know, it's from the mid-morning, and we saw it yesterday. We definitely saw this soybean market, export sales. Something mm-hmm. was in there when you had corn and wheat lower, soybeans, and the rumor and the general feeling is the Chinese bought another 3 to 5 cargoes for fairly quick shipment, U.S. and South American origin. And ocean freight's down. It's logical. They always like to buy on the dip, so to speak, and they were in there doing their normal buying. The corn and the wheat market was lower. My private meteorologist, I talked to him about 10 o'clock today, and he indicated that Argentina, you know, basically end of the month, pretty darn good. And there's good additional rains in Brazil as well. One private firm talked about this heavy rains in Mato Grosso do Sul, some 20 inches, and both that and myself basically came across with the idea that, you know, that's not too far from normal. It was a one-shot weather deal, and chances are the weather, they can handle that kind of moisture. It's 2 weeks of that would cause concern, like, you know, rust or something like that to start. So it's not too unusual. It looks like it could be, my opinion, a bin-buster crop. And the final thing on the soybeans, you know, the New York Times on Sunday indicated the government officials are estimating at least 1,250 square miles of the forest being destroyed for more soybean production, and we are getting reports that there is the pedals, the metal to increase soybean production for next year.
Does all this fundamental news tell you that there's potentially a top in the market?
Well, you know, that's something that that's interesting. I know Glenn Ring, we subscribe to him, and he talks about a commodity, you know, showing some toppiness like gold, silver, and crude oil. You know, and a lot of it was waiting for this Fed funds rate cut. The dollar did drop considerably. And he did even talk about commodities act differently at higher price levels. You know, example, $3 corn versus $5 corn. You know, it does take a speculator. We talk about margin money for hedging operations being expensive. It is even expensive for a speculator to buy corn at $5 a bushel, beans at $13, and wheat at $10. And the reason is it takes more money and the margin requirements are larger. So these commodities are acting a little different than they did 45 days ago.
And your thought is that they'll be sideways to lower?
Well, I think what we're waiting for is some more information. And what information are we waiting for? Well, mm-hmm. you know, every farm meeting, we know these seed companies all of a sudden are having more meetings to try to sell more seed corn. Most of the meetings throughout the Midwest that we're hearing about is there is this talk about more soybean acres, less corn. It's on the front page of Agri-News. Sales indicate switch back to beans. And, you know, we're also waiting for, you know, some further ideas about the wheat acreage and things like that. So the world growing conditions seem to be in pretty good shape. Argentina is starting to sell wheat and corn again. So we're starting to see commerce get back more to an orderly fashion, at least in the world.
Well, does all of this tell you that as the soybeans may be potentially looking at more acres here in the U.S.? Certainly
yeah, I do. And I think the one footnote here that we have to be concerned is about seed quality and germination. But I do think that it's noted that with the large wheat acreage, you know, the double crop issue is a factor, meaning more beans. And also the additional factor is that we'll see more bean acres next year in South America, and we'll see more bean acres here in the U.S. And as a result of that, I think that if there was a market that, and we always have to tiptoe on very carefully when we make these kind of statements, is that maybe we are going to see acreage expansion in the next 24 months and the major tops in the soybean. In other words, with normal weather, you know, do we really need to see $15 soybeans in the United States? You know, it's a question mark. You know, I even think the door is open for a big harvest in South America. You'll even see some soybeans come into the U.S. later on in the year.
Interesting. So are your thoughts that the price of corn can hold steady even in the face of a falling bean market?
Well, it's, you know, with if we do see wheat, you know, Dan Bassey's even talking about this $2 drop at some point in time in wheat, and I have that feeling, you know, it'll definitely put some sort of a temporary deal on the corn market. But the major problem with the corn market is that for 3 to 5 years, we are going to see a very definite need to grow corn acres and grow feed grain acres. And that's one of the major factors here that I do think that the one commodity that's probably going to be the strong pillar, so to speak, is going to be definitely corn. And getting the acreage is a factor. And the second factor is the extremely high cost of fertilizer here in the U.S. and the world. And then the third thing we're hearing is that we're seeing people actually going in on some of these conservation acres, paying the penalty and drawing some acres out into production. We understand that on that 16 million acre deal, people are paying the penalties. There's good lines of people in the Dakotas and Iowa that are putting ground into production. So we are seeing that. My hunch is if I was going to do that, I'd put it in soybeans.
All right. Thanks much. We appreciate you being with us.
Have a profitable day, Todd.
You too, Paul. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Wednesday after the afternoon. At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, should join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Here's what the forecast from our own chief meteorologist at the radio station, Ed Kieser, looks like for the two-state region. A winter storm watch is in effect for central and much of southern Illinois from tomorrow evening through Friday morning, and for much of Indiana from tomorrow evening through Friday evening. Tonight, Ed says increasing cloudiness. Lows will range from 2 in the far northwestern parts of Illinois to 25 in the far south. Tomorrow in northern and central Illinois, it'll be cloudy, some areas of light snow during the afternoon. In southern Illinois and southwestern Indiana, cloudy, a mix of light rain, some wet snow arriving during the afternoon. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy. Highs will range from 20 tomorrow in the northwestern part of Illinois to 45 in the far south central parts of Indiana. Tomorrow, wind speeds at 12 to 24 miles an hour. Dave Dickey's here now with the news.
Agricultural news. New USDA Secretary Ed Schaefer says he spent much of his first day in office getting briefings and meeting with President Bush on the Farm Bill. Schaefer says the president essentially told him, go out and get it done. Schaefer acknowledged there are still sharp divides between Congress and the White House on Farm Bill policy.
One of the things we talked about in the interview process at the White House originally was, what are they looking for? You know, are they looking for someone just to ride out the end of the administration here? Are they looking for somebody to wade in on issues and be involved? The president's asked me to get involved in trade issues. I plan on doing that. And I'll be side by side with Chuck, and we'll be working to narrow those gaps and get a farm bill that the president can sign.
Schaefer compared himself and USDA Deputy Secretary Chuck Connor to geese flying in a V formation. Schaefer says in his words, I'm now going to be breaking the wind for Chuck. Brazil's Foreign Trade Council yesterday kept that nation's 10% wheat import tax. The decision came shortly after Argentina decided it would export up to 2 million metric tons of wheat over the next several months. If the tax was removed, it would have made it cost-effective to import wheat from the U.S. Brazil wheat industry officials say Brazil needs around 4 million metric tons of wheat. The president of the Kansas City Board of Trade says a takeover of the exchange could very well happen. That's a sharp turnaround from previous remarks. Jeff Borchardt says, in his words, anything is possible. The KCBT is one of the last member-owned exchanges in the U.S. U.S. Energy Secretary Sam Bodman says that the fiscal year 2009 budget will deal with the question of whether a 54 cents a gallon import tariff on ethanol should be allowed to expire or be renewed. In Bodman's words, "The best I can tell, this industry is pretty close to being able to stand on its own. The tariff on ethanol imports is set to expire at the end of 2008. Tyson Foods says its first quarter profits fell 40% from a year ago due to surging grain and fuel costs. Tyson says it plans to substantially raise costs for its chicken and beef products that account for 78% of its total sales. And the Governmental Accountability Office says the Food and Drug Administration is coming up short on plans to protect the country's food supply. The GAO says the FDA has failed to fully explain a food safety inspection plan introduced last November. The GAO says the plan lacks a clear description of resources and strategies. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. There you'll find most of the daily ag programming produced by the public radio station here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. And you'll also find Commodity Week. It can all be downloaded as an MP3 file, or if you'd like, have it delivered to your computer directly, automatically, as a podcast. Now up next, corn farmers are under the gun to raise a national average crop of 300 bushels to the acre by the year 2030. And this number is floating around as a realistic goal, but is it possible? I'll have more with an Iowa State Extension corn specialist. The reason numbers like a 300 bushel to the acre national corn average exist is easy to understand, says Iowa State's Roger Elmore. The Extension corn specialist says it's used as a crutch to avoid the food versus fuel debate. He doesn't think it is very realistic. Elmore says about half of the yield gains made in corn production since the 1920s can be attributed to management, and more importantly, that most of those management decisions were the easy part of the process. The agronomist says the low-hanging fruit that can now only be tweaked are things like crop rotation, planting date, row spacing, seeding rates, soil fertility, weed, insect, and disease management, and even hybrids. He reminds us the genetic alterations of the corn plant have not improved yield potential, raised the corn yield ceiling. So all that's left are the high-end management techniques. Every corn plant, Elmore says, is going to have to do more than just look like every other plant in the field.
I can almost guarantee if you have a 350 bushel yield environment that every plant's going to look like every plant. It's planted the same depth, the spacing is nearly perfect, it comes up within a day of each other, and they silk at the same time, they pollinate at the same time. All these things are perfectly orchestrated, and that's what is necessary for maximum yields.
There is work that suggests this type of orchestration. Equidistant seeding and consistent planting depth results in things like a common emergence date. And getting all the plants in a field to the same stage of growth at the same time is the key to putting more corn in the bin at harvest.
There's a few sets of data we can use on that. And maybe this is extreme, but let's say half of your plants come up 7 days later. That's about two leaf stages behind. So you might have a 10 leaf stage plant, and then you have half your plants that are maybe eight leaf stage. That's a 6% yield hit right there. Now, if you're 120 bushels, what's 6%? But if you're 200 bushels, 6% adds up very quickly. So that's the importance of uniform depth and uniform everything that you can get. Get that seed down into the soil well. Well placed, you don't want to plant too wet. In the last 2 years in Iowa, I've seen so many issues with early season planting conditions that result in poor root growth, rootless corn, sidewall compaction, you name it, all those things result in more plant-to-plant variation, reducing yield.
A uniform cornfield is a high-yielding cornfield. There is one other note from Roger Elmore on corn management. He says increasing seeding rates or field populations has been a very large part of the higher yields in his state, Iowa. Seeding rates have, over the past 40 years, increased annually by about 300 to 400 seeds per acre across the Midwest. Hybrids are constantly bred for the increased population counts, and it means a farmer that's still planted at population rates from 5 years ago is about 2,000 seeds behind schedule. That reduces yield potential. Although, Elmore is quick to point out, there is a point at which increasing population does not pay for the seed. Knowing where that point is on your farm is part of good corn management. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, providing independent commodity and financial analysis to clients throughout the United States. Risk Management Commodities Incorporated has offices located in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. More information is available at 866-837-9027.
Time to take a Wednesday afternoon look at the cash grain market. Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
A cold Wednesday afternoon to you, Todd.
Boy, I guess it's still cold. You said, I think, what, 18 degrees there, 17 degrees here, and it doesn't look like it's going to make it to the highs that are predicted for the day, roughly speaking. So I guess we're in for some cold weather and some rough weather over the next couple of days. Have farmers taken advantage of the frozen ground at all to move any crop in the last several days?
Well, you kind of have mixed emotions out here. A lot of the guys don't like to start their trucks when it's this cold, and they'll wait till the weather warms up. The lines are over with. We've got practically all of our January contracts in, so they're just content to haul a little spot now and then. We've probably had maybe 30 or 40 trucks today. No huge amounts, but interest in selling has kind of waned at this point, Todd.
Do you think that's the right thing for them to do?
Well, you know, really, you know, the industry had a really good chance to sell this thing off drastically. They could have taken a lot of money out of this market, you know, last week, and they didn't. We saw a much-needed correction, I think, but you know, it's kind of holding its own. So I think, you know, they use the old highs for benchmarks. I think they want to see corn back up over 5 and new crop beans up around the 12 before they really want to get serious about doing anything.
You think there's a shot at that?
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, the balance sheets still look pretty precarious in the next year. And, you know, we'll know more as the USDA has their ag forum in February, and then we look forward to planting intentions. But the thing that puzzles me, and I really haven't read exactly why, but these new crop prices have really suffered since we had that setback. We're 60 cents off the high in beans and 20 in corn, they're going to wait for these highs to come back before they do anything seriously.
What are your bids for the day?
All right, our cash corn today is 4.77, cash beans are 12.16, and new crop wheat today is 7.56.
And before I let you go, maybe you better put one quick word in on basis there.
All right, the basis levels have suffered just a little bit on the nearby. The deferreds are still staying pretty strong.
Thanks much, Kay.
Thank you.
Kay Whitlock with Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Join us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. In 2 minutes, we should be talking with Drew Lerner, but I know he's out of the office. So Ed Keyser, our own chief meteorologist, will join us this afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Time now for your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. 9 members of the Illinois congressional delegation, including both senators and Congressman Tim Johnson, sent a letter to President Bush today about the FutureGen project. They want the president to move forward with the experimental low-emission coal-burning plant, despite Energy Secretary Samuel Bodman's decision to restructure the program. Bodman's decision effectively kills plans for building a plant in Mattoon. The letter says that the only plausible explanation for the move is because the FutureGen Alliance chose Mattoon over competing sites in Texas, the president's home state. Meanwhile, a FutureGen Alliance board member says Bodman's long-standing misgivings about the overall project led to his decision to pull support for the Mattoon site. Frederick Palmer, an executive with Peabody Energy, says he supports the Illinois congressional delegation's efforts to work directly with the president to revive FutureGen. Maurice Legrone Jr. has lost his latest attempt to get his murder conviction overturned for the drowning deaths of three young children in Clinton Lake in 2003. The 4th District Appellate Court turned down Legrone's request for a new trial. Legrone was convicted of first-degree murder for the deaths of the three young children of then-girlfriend Amanda Hamm. He and Hamm contend the car accidentally went into the lake. Former Illinois Governor Jim Thompson says U.S. Senator John McCain is his pick in the presidential race. Thompson originally backed former New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani, but today the Illinois Republican said he's shifting his support to McCain and has no doubt he'll carry Illinois. The National Weather Service is investigating possible tornado damage near Martinsville, Indiana, the west side of Indianapolis, and in Poseyville in southwest Indiana. 4 deaths have been linked to the storm, including 2 in Poseyville. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture, and Ed Kieser, AM 580 Weather, now joins us from his office, filling in this afternoon for Drew Lerner. Thanks much for doing that, Ed. We appreciate it.
It's good to be here.
Tell me first about the rough weather. We heard just a little bit about that in the end of the news segment, but the rough weather we had earlier in the week.
Well, yesterday was a dramatic day weather-wise across our 2-state area. We had a blizzard warning and near-blizzard conditions in northwestern Illinois, while at the same time, tornado warnings. And now apparently a few tornado touchdowns. I saw one report in from a damage survey team that in Poseyville in southern Indiana. That was an EF2 tornado, so a strong tornado. And the survey crews are out looking at some other damage. And, of course, we had strong straight-line winds gusting in many places over 60 miles per hour last evening, 60 at Willard Airport, and I saw some reports higher than that. So a lot of wind and a dramatic drop in temperature, about a 40-degree drop in less than 2 hours. So quite a big day yesterday and a quiet day by comparison today.
Yeah, a little lull in the action. Kind of cold today, but looks like we're going back into some heavy weather again shortly.
Well, we have another storm system, and this one's going to take a different track. It's going to approach us from the southwest and come up through the Tennessee and Ohio valleys. And as a result, much of our area is going to be on the cold side of that system, so the precipitation with it's going to be in the form of snow. And it looks like some locally heavy snowfall is possible. We're looking at that starting up in earnest tomorrow night and continuing into Friday morning. We'll have some snow showers even during the day tomorrow to the north and west in Illinois, and some mixed precipitation, rain and snow pushing into southern Illinois tomorrow and southwestern Indiana. But it overspreads the 2-state area tomorrow night, and in a band from around St. Louis to central and east central Illinois, west central into northern Indiana, generally north of Fort Wayne, there could be a swath there that gets over 6 inches of snow, and the wind is really going to pick up tomorrow night. So I think tomorrow night into Friday, we're going to have big travel problems. But by Friday afternoon, the storm has passed, and Friday night, we start to have the winds really die down and get quiet again.
So my kids are going to be wanting to be out of school on Friday if that's the case.
It's a possibility. I'm sure a lot of kids are going to be watching the radar tomorrow night.
I bet they will be. What else should we talk about in the Midwest or on the planet in terms of weather events? Anything?
Well, I think in South America, there are some question marks going into next week. There were some indications that it was going to get hot. Now, maybe not so hot. And some areas that have been dry may get a little bit of rain. So that's going to, I think, bring some volatility to the markets here as there's some uncertainties. But right now, the driest areas remain in Argentina. The eastern sections of the growing areas, the western areas have gotten good moisture the last couple of weeks. And in Brazil, most areas have very favorable moisture, but in far southern sections around Rio Grande do Sul, it's dry. And that's an area that may start to pick up some showers this weekend or early next week. And we'll just have to wait and see how that all plays out.
Thanks for filling us in on the weather and for filling in this afternoon for Drew Lerner, who was out, Ed. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Ed Kieser, chief meteorologist right here at WILL AM 580. joining us this afternoon from the weather office in the station. Thanks much to him for filling in for Drew Lerner today. That is the Closing Market Report. Remember to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:50 a.m. for our first look at the agricultural markets. Dave Dickey will be here at that time. He'll help you go through the opening markets or the pre-opening markets from the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange. And don't forget, if you'd like to listen to anything that you've heard on the air, or most of it that you've heard on the air for ag programming today, you can do that again this afternoon if you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.